Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 66 of the Let's Talk Yoga podcast. I hope you are doing well. On the show today, I have a special conversation lined up for you. We're talking about the different margas or paths of yoga and how to live your yoga off your mat with Uma Subramaniam. Uma and I met a decade ago when I still lived in India. We met briefly. We, in fact, have a common teacher. And I had no idea that a decade later, when I reached out to her, that she would even remember that brief encounter. And it was, she obliged instantly to come and share about how to live your yoga off your mat, which I'm so grateful for, because it's not an easy topic, right? And it has many layers and nuances to it. So in today's conversation, Uma and I really start to unpack what are these margas, what marga being a path, what are these paths of yoga, and how to really start living your yoga off your mat, and how to get started. Does a teacher initiate you? Is it something you do on your own? And Uma answers all of this in today's show. Uma has a master's in yogic sciences, as well as a master's in Sanskrit. And she has been teaching with a 1,000 Yoga Academy in India since 2011. And that's how we met. She has been part of many, many yoga teacher training programs and has interacted with a lot of yoga graduates as they navigate their career. She's also a level 2 yoga teacher with the Ministry of Ayush. Again, this, some of this may not make sense to you because it's a lot of Indian credentialing, but she is someone who was initiated into yoga by her father when she was younger, and her interest slowly evolved to rigorous martial arts. And then she went on to study English literature and started working. She eventually moved to the US. She lived here for 15 years before going back to India. And that's when she says her second yoga life really began. And today, she consults and designs yoga therapy programs for a startup in Bangalore. She also continues to teach and train yoga students all over. She also teaches students in Austria and in Germany and Spain, and works with corporates, helping them to really control and understand what it means to have stress in your life and how to deal with it. Yep. She teaches the Bhagavad Gita and elementary Sanskrit. She works with an NGO and is currently on a 4-year-long path of studying the Yajur Veda. Okay. So I'm so glad Uma was able to be on the show today to answer all the questions about what it means to understand the paths of yoga and how to live your yoga off your mat. I hope you find this conversation enriching and insightful. But again, if you come back here week after week, you listen to this content, you get some value from this podcast, then please take a moment to leave us a review and a rating. It's the only way other yoga seekers like you will find content like this, and it makes the podcast more visible. And I know it'll take you honestly very little time. I know a lot of you come back and leave reviews, more than one review, in fact, and I'm grateful for that. So I hope you take a moment to do that. And here's my conversation with Uma Subramaniam.
Hi, my name is Arundhati, and you're listening to the Let's Talk Yoga podcast. I'm an ex-Bollywood dancer turned yoga and wellness educator. I've built a 6-figure business as an immigrant, woman of color yoga teacher with no business background, no handstands, pure instinct, and the free information found on Google. If you love doing yoga and you dream of teaching it someday, this podcast is for you. We go over everything from doing and teaching yoga to scaling a small business, living a modern yoga lifestyle, and so much more. You'll find interesting, fun, raw conversations along with some tips, tricks, strategies, and insights in this podcast. So grab your cup of chai and let's jump in.
Hi, Uma. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Arundhati. Thank you. Good to be here.
I know we've connected after a decade, but yes. For the listeners who don't know you and the work you do, can you tell us a little more about yourself?
Yes, honestly, actually, it's hilarious and hard for me to remove the Vedanta out of this question and keep it simple, but I'll try my best. The past feels like a resume and the future is like a ticket in some time somewhere. So let's start with the now. And you know what? I turned 50 this year and I'm feeling so happy like a kid in a candy store. I have no idea why. And for some reason, I just thought that's the first thing I want to say. I mean, it just keeps coming back. I am so happy. And a little bit more about myself. I'm married with two kids, an older daughter graduating in spring as an archaeologist, a younger son, 16 years old, looking at psychology and artificial intelligence. My husband has been a finance banking guy all 28 years of our married life. We used to live in Charlotte, North Carolina for about 15 years, and we moved to India back in 2008, mostly to be closer to our aging parents and to give an additional educational and cultural experience for the kids. So I was 38 when we moved to Bangalore. I left corporate work to take up yoga in life, mostly to pick myself back up after kids, the move back home, etc. Then in less than a year, I realized I would like to continue and stay in this state of physical and mental health. So went on from there to complete a master's degree in yogic sciences and started sharing my yoga experience with other women. So life has its own plan, and I happened to meet the most important teacher in my life, Pradeep Satwamaya. I settled down to manage about six yoga studios in Bangalore. And that's where I met you last time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember. Yeah. How envious I was with your grace and lightness of movement. You know, that's what I remember most. And when I used to be on social media for a brief time, again, early last decade, I definitely watched your progress and growth in yoga. Very happy for you, how you and your yoga have metamorphosized with time. And it's so good to be here today with you again. And really, long story short, I haven't looked at other things since 2008. All my time has naturally and organically been about less than more. And I've never felt richer, never felt more fulfilled or purposeful, you know. So now I teach on the mat. I teach Gita. I do corporate workshops for stress relief, train TTC students. I do spend a lot of time with the Upanishads and recently the Vedas under the guidance of some of the greatest teachers. So that's it. That's it. I'm here, all yours.
You know, when I messaged you kind of out of the blue after Luvina, it was like, you got to talk to Uma. And I was like, oh, I'm sure she's not going to remember who I am, but can you please tell her I will reach out to her? And when you told me, I'm like, you're like, oh, we met here, and you were so clear in your memory. I was like, wow, she remembers.
Yeah.
So I hope it's not another decade before we connect again. So Uma, before we get into our topic about, you know, we're going to be chatting about the different paths of yoga and how to really live your yoga off your mat today. But I just have a quick side question because you mentioned this. You said you've done a master's in yoga. Very quickly, what is your take on the 200-hour model versus someone like you who's invested years in studies and getting a master's in yoga?
Yeah, I also certify people with the 200 hours. You know that, right?
I mean, so do I.
Indeed, yes. So, yeah, yoga education never ends, just like many other, you know, fields of education. In fact, after doing an MSc in yoga, I did YTT 200, YTT 300. I also did, you know, children's yoga certification, prenatal yoga certification, everything with Pradeep. And each time it was a different experience. It was, you know, furthering my interest, furthering my knowledge, you know. So it can be vice versa. You can do your 200 YTT and then go on to do your MSc in yoga. You can, you know, do it the other way also. But you are not doing the right thing if you stop with the 200 and then start shop the next day and start teaching and think that is it. Yeah. And if you think that is it, then that is where you go wrong. But if you're learning every day as you teach, as you practice, then it is absolutely fine. Keep learning and each day transform yourself for the better. Then if you've had the best teacher, nothing like it. YTT is fine, you know. give yourself time. That's all.
Absolutely. I think having the right teacher is so central to how we show up in the world as yoga seekers or yoga teachers.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm hoping the listeners don't get confused between styles of yoga and yoga schools. And, you know, out here we have yoga trends. But before we get into the different paths of yoga, firstly, Uma, why do we have so many different paths of yoga, these different margas? Why is it important for us as yoga students and yoga seekers to even know of these paths?
Right. Yeah, again, you're right. The paths or means to yoga are not the same as the many styles and schools of Hatha Yoga as it is practiced now. And again, to answer your question, why do we have many paths of yoga? Let me first say these paths of yoga are not cut in stone. They are not final or rigid by any means. It was not decided by any one person, nor were these all created at a single time of our eventful past. Let's start with a simple example, Arundhati. Would you call yourself a morning person?
Oh, me? No, more an evening person. More an evening person.
Okay. What is the best time of your day? What is the best time of your day for you?
For me, it would be, well, there are two parts, Uma. There is, I wouldn't say I'm an early morning person like you. I know you start your day really early.
Yeah.
For me, I would say my day, I'm probably between 8 to 10 a.m. is one of my favorite parts of the day.
Okay.
And then the next part of the day is more like a 5 to 7, 7:30 p.m. type of chunk. But
okay.
I'm more an evening person, not an early morning person. I also think because Seattle, it's pretty dark and cloudy and gray. So mornings are not, there's no sun, so
sure.
Evening.
Sure. These are just really quick questions, you know, taking us towards the different parts of yoga. I'll tell you why, how I'm getting to it, but it's just simple question. So then what is the best time for your personal yoga practice on the mat, you know, asanas, pranayama?
Morning, 8:30 to 9:30 or 8 to 9 a.m., yes.
Excellent. And if you have to meditate, then what time is the best time for you?
I usually do it after my asana practice. I sit down right after.
After that. Okay, fine. So good. Then I know, as a yogi, I'm sure you can settle down for anything at any time. But if there is major grind work to finish up, then what time of the day would you put it for? Would you keep that for? Which time is better than another time?
Oh, if there are things to do, sadly, it gets pushed to later in the day.
And if I'm being
truly, truly, truly honest with you, sometimes I will end up having to skip it because there are more urgent, not important, but more urgent things to do.
Right. Two more questions. Okay. Don't get worried. Okay. Who's doing what now? How do you feel at 1 p.m. on any given day?
Slightly slow. And like I need a pick me up, unless I've done like a very nice energizing asana practice in the morning, then it's a little different. But otherwise, usually 1 o'clock to 2 p.m. it gets a little slow.
Right, and then at about 9 p.m.
Oh, I'm wide awake. I usually finish teaching, and I'm like, I'm driving home. I work evening and night shift, as I call it out here, Uma. Classes go pretty late in the night, unlike India where it's earlier in the evening and earlier in the day. So sometimes I teach till 9:30. I've taught till 10 p.m., 10:30 p.m. So 9 o'clock, I'm wide awake and energized.
Right.
Sadly.
So you see what I'm getting at. This is just one person and one day. And if you think of any other person, can you even try and match your daily schedule with that person? Exactly. Your physical energy, your mental, emotional, and spiritual energy varies throughout the day, you know, right from morning till evening. It picks up, it goes down, it picks up, it goes down. And so there are certain things you do at specific times according to your understanding of yourself or according to an accepted norm like a Ritucharya or a Dinacharya or a Ratricharya. These are like waking up at a certain time, bathing, eating at a certain time, exercise, vyayama at a certain time, relaxation at a certain time. All of this is planned for you with your own experience. Same way, There are many paths to achieve or reach the state of yoga. It is different for each person at different stages of their lives. You know, I'm thinking of myself, of my yoga, when I was learning from my father as a 10 years old. Oh, it was most dreadful, you know. I had to wake up at 5 in the morning and not eat anything and then continue the yoga and then only do anything at all. It was so dreadful, but I did practice with my dad. He was my first teacher. And then I think of yoga when I was practicing martial arts. I moved to martial arts because I was so tired of my dad's yoga. And then there was a yoga there also for me while practicing martial arts. And that was, I was a strappy young 18-year-old. And that yoga was so different for me, you know. And at yoga at 38, when I moved, you know, after the kids and I moved back to India, that was a different experience. You know? And then now my yoga is something else. So now you see why we have many parts of yoga, because there are many types and kinds of seekers. And why is it important for us as yoga seekers to know this? That was your question, right? Along with
yes.
this. So if you have come to a plateau with your yoga practice and feel something is missing, something is lacking, then it's time, well, first to stop buying the next best brand of yoga wear or accessories to get over that feeling. Instead, look deeper, look closer and seek the right teacher. You may be already doing all the right things and may not just see it. And that is what the right teacher would do. Show you the way, the many ways, the different paths that you can take to achieve this state of yoga. So it is important for you to know that, you know, when you are reaching this plateau, then something is wrong. It's not fully there. So you look for someone who can guide you better towards the many ways.
I'm so, you know, it warms my heart when you say you have to find the right teacher, because I understand what you're talking about, maybe because we have cultural similarities, we have, you know, we have a teacher in common. But I feel like so often here, at least in the Western world here, people get caught up in trying to find a quick fix or an answer from someone outside. But the answer is always within.
Right. Absolutely.
But you've got to really do the work. And that once you find a teacher who nourishes you, I feel like it's very hard to, you will plateau, but you will know, you will be able to slowly move out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Uma, what are the various paths or margas of yoga?
See, we are also used to seeing yoga only on the mat in one part of the world, right? And then in the other part where I am, we have these wild images of bearded, naked yogis doing all kinds of stuff. So what is it? What else is there? And what else should I be doing is the question. You know, I can imagine, picture myself, you know, doing the yoga in the West. And then are you doing the right thing? Because you see so many other things going on in this other part of the world. So the main parts of yoga, to answer your question, this might sound very textbookish, and you may, I mean, all of you, the listeners especially, you know, may have already done this in your YTT. It's nothing that you don't know. So there is Jnana Yoga, the path of attaining knowledge through the practice of meditation, self-inquiry, contemplation. There is Bhakti Yoga, as we call it, the practice of selfless devotion and recognition of the divine in oneself and all. Karma Yoga, the path of dedicated work, renouncing results of actions as a spiritual practice. And then we have Raja Yoga, which encompasses both body and mind, but the emphasis on mental and spiritual development through the body. Now, this is information that is widely available, you know, but this information alone, honestly, may not help anybody here, because it's really the tip of the iceberg. Definition of the types of yoga is literally the tip of the iceberg. Yeah. But let's see what else we are talking about today and how it may provide more practical answers and solutions to living yoga off the mat. So let's go ahead. And so I don't want to answer too much too soon.
Okay. So I want to add a footnote. You know, because you've done teacher trainings for so long and you just said it in passing, like, oh, you know, I'm sure this is something you know. But honestly, Uma, a lot of teacher trainings here are so heavily asana and anatomy focused. And I would argue that they're not even like completely teaching all aspects of asana, that a lot of teacher trainees don't know these margas. Like they don't know what is jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, karma yoga. Right? You would think that it's available freely, but on average, I would say it's almost invisible. And maybe because we've diluted yoga teachings in the West in certain parts a lot more. But without complaining to you, I will go to my next question here.
Sure. No, I understand. Carry on. Let's see where this takes us further. And I will definitely add a little bit more. Yeah, and not assume anything.
So here's a question for you. So how does someone who's doing asana at a modern yoga studio, how do they understand which path is suitable? Do they even need to pick a path?
Right. Yeah. If you've not much information about the four paths, then this is going to be a little more difficult to understand. But let me try and explain this. See, the four paths that we just talked about, jnana, bhakti, raja, and karma yoga, these are sometimes compared to the bud, the flower bud, the tender fruit, you know, that is just fruit happening. And then the unripe fruit that is full but not yet ripe, and then the fully ripe fruit. Okay, so it is compared. It's sometimes called like that. Okay, but what does that tell you? That one leads to the other. So there is no such thing like this is the path for me, this is the only path for me. At the same time, it does not mean that one path is better than the other or one path is superior to the other. It is not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can follow one more path. You most certainly will actually follow more than one path. Just like how you have a sattvic time of day, a rajasic time of day, and a tamasic time of the same day, your yoga will go through evolution. You know, all four yogas together stimulate life, leading you closer to truth or leading you closer to that one knowledge that sets you free. To quote another metaphor, the combined effort of all the horses is necessary to efficiently draw the chariot forward. You know, one horse can't go that side and one can't stop and one can't, you know, run away. So same way, all parts of yoga is something that will intertwine during your practice, during your life, during your sadhana and abhyasa. And all four are equally important and efficiently help. I don't know if that helps your answer. Can you follow more than one path? That's what you were asking, right? So,
yeah, no, and it helps. It helps. So, yeah. Can I ask you a follow up to that? So,
sure.
Where does one learn these different paths of yoga, or how does one deepen their? Do we just open a book and read about it, and then do we kind of make an educated guess? My question is, do we need to label ourselves as this is the type of yoga path I am on? Or is there a better way of going about this?
Right. So in this yoga world right now, the best way to start is with the body. I'll tell you why. I'm not evading the question about jnana, karma, bhakti and raja yoga. I'm not. Okay. Well, I'll come back to why I keep going back to the mat and the body. Okay. Using the mind to bring discipline in the body gently but firmly, regularly, with constant practice over many, many years. Yeah? This is where we are as Hatha yogis. Now, yoga did not become like this accidentally. If you see in the four important paths, Hatha yoga is not even there. You know, jnana, karma, bhakti and jnana, karma, bhakti and what's the other one? Raja yoga.
Raja
in that, Hatha yoga is not a name that is there. Okay, but it doesn't mean, and we are all now only practicing Hatha yoga. But yoga did not become like this accidentally. The path is right and tested. Okay, Hatha yoga. But somewhere it has become littered with stuff. Okay, So Hatha yoga, what you and I and all of us are doing is perfect. Remember, it leads you to Raja yoga, nothing less. So that Raja yoga, which is one of the main four paths, you are doing the right thing towards Raja yoga. Yeah, you need not look further. just stay aware of what you are doing and keep that faith on what you have learned from the good teacher. Okay. To understand what is Bhakti Yoga, what is Karma Yoga, and Jnana Yoga takes time. It also takes a qualified teacher to share that knowledge.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
In the course of your yoga practice, if you realize yoga in your actions, even daily mundane activities, in your selfless devotion to life itself or the creator of this life, and if this happens over many years of being on the path, then you have succeeded in inspiring all the horses of your chariot to move forward. You have practiced Jnana Yoga, you have practiced Bhakti Yoga, you have practiced Karma Yoga in your own very life by just paying attention and completely being on the mat is fine. Okay, so there have been many Jnana Yogis, many Bhakti Yogis, and many Karma Yogis, and there are many here even now. But if you're looking for something else to do in addition to what you're doing, then I would first suggest you look closer at what it is you're doing now before you look further. Understand the Hatha Yoga. Understand the body, breath, and mind complex. Continue your practice. Keep going back to what you already have learned, your yama, niyama, asana, pranayama, pause, pick up again. All the other parts of yoga start from here. And like I said earlier, it is likely that you're already a karma yogi. You're already a jnana yogi and a bhakti yogi. You have just not been able to recognize or acknowledge yet. You're looking from without to see what is next, what am I missing, what am I lacking, should I be doing something else? No, look closer and you will find all these aspects right there in your life if your Hatha Yoga practice is good.
Okay, beautifully explained. I think there is in the West, what I've noticed is there is this obsession to label yourself and group yourself or categorize yourself into a certain thing.
Right.
So I can almost see like the listeners will be quite like questioning themselves, like, do I call myself a karma yogi? Do I call myself a bhakti yogi? So I'm glad you're talking about how this is a slow process.
Right.
And
it is.
How it's meant to be carried with you every moment of your life and how it evolves. So speaking about just these four margas, jnana, bhakti, karma, I know the listeners will have a little more insight into these three paths. Can you give us a little more information about what is Raja Yoga? Because honestly, Uma, that's not something you hear about so easily here in yoga circles. So can you very briefly just explain what is Raja Yoga?
Right. So Patanjali's Ashtanga Yoga is otherwise called Raja Yoga. So then who's Patanjali? What is Ashtanga Yoga? You know, if that is something that we have learned during our, you know, yoga practice or a teacher training, it'll be easier. It is again where body and mind is used to attain this freedom, liberation, okay, from the known. So the Raja Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga is an eight-limbed path. It starts with Yama and Niyama, you know, practices. As it's popularly called, sometimes do's and don'ts, or practices for yourself and practices how you interact with this society, you know. And then it moves on from those observances to asana, and then moving on to the next limb, which is pranayama. And then it moves on to pratyahara practices like yoga nidra, then dharana, dhyana, finally achieving samadhi. So samadhi is the goal of Raja Yoga. Samadhi is the goal of Ashtanga Yoga.
Okay. Got it.
So, yeah. But this is again a very tough path. And so mostly later in the, you know, post, what is it called? AD time, Hatha Yoga became a little more popular because it was more approachable for people as a practice and as something to be taught and given down generations. And so it was more of a physical practice with cleansing practices, asana, pranayama, towards achieving stability in the body so that you can slowly go deeper into the mind. A slightly easier way, you know, four-pronged way. And so Hatha Yoga prepares you for Raja Yoga. So it is not that you are too far from it as you are practicing on the mat. This Hatha Yoga reaches you, takes you towards Raja Yoga, which is a lot more strict on the mind aspect and meditation aspect. And Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi, the Antaranga practices can start right after you are a accomplished Hatha Yogi. So that is Raja Yoga. So it is one of the very four parts of the main parts of yoga. Like I said, you're already doing it. It's just that you have not been able to recognize it, mostly because you have not been taught what is what. So that is why it takes a little more time. And yoga always says, you know, less is more, as Pradeep always says. Do what you're doing. Do it right. Instead of keeping on trying to do the next, what is it, YTT 300, and then the next, and then
yeah, the next course, and the next thing. And yeah, exactly.
So,
the next part of this conversation is something I've been really eager to ask you and to really understand more. Do these margas, do these paths of yoga make living your yoga off the mat easier, or do they simplify it? Because here there is this constant question of how do we live our yoga, right? And there are so many sincere yoga seekers just trying to figure it out. But again, the missing piece is the teacher is they're not able to find the teacher who can guide them to understanding this. So do these paths, or does the knowing these paths, does that make living yoga easier?
So once you have understood the different parts of yoga, once you're able to identify the many transformations happening around you, your life, and the web of social interdependence around you, then you will begin to see how small things bring so much happiness. You know, if you are unable to get on the mat today because of n number of reasons, sick child, extra work at the office, bad hair day, whatever, go for a 30-minute walk. Read a meaningful book or journal you have put aside, you know, since your teacher's training. Check on your older neighbors, perhaps. Drop by the animal shelter and just hang out. I keep telling you this. You may be already doing a lot. You just need to step back and witness it then. Do nothing. Yeah, smile. Breathe. Okay? So, how do you live yoga off the mat? Again, you can't be doing. Yoga is all about doing less and less and just simply being. How can you do that if you're going to keep looking for, should I be doing this? What should I do next? You know, the mat, after the mat, what should I do? Live and sometimes do nothing. And that is going
to something
help
we don't know how to do.
Exactly. I know. That is the toughest thing. How do you do nothing? How do you do nothing? When you shut everything down is when you're able to get this mind faculty to yourself. Otherwise, the mind is constantly bombarded with just the sensations, the stimulus, you know, looking at something, hearing something, touching, feeling something, you know, smelling, eating. All of these things are happening and the mind is constantly working that 10%, and the rest of it is dormant or unused. It is just not stimulated. It is just not inspired enough. So doing nothing is the biggest thing that you can do sometimes. Only then you will be able to live yoga off your mat. That's the first thing you should do. Get off the mat or on the mat like you do. Sit and meditate. See how long you can extend that. See how much you can get from that.
Mm-hmm. We often look for like a complicated solution to things, right? But
absolutely,
it is. But yoga always, I always tell people, yoga is, the system is so practical. It is meant to be super simple. We are the complications in that system, right? We want it to be more complicated and a 10-step process to like do something that is just like sit, breathe, watch what you're doing, notice your mind moving. So what is the teacher's role in making the student live their yoga? Or is it dependent on the caliber of the student? Like, who initiates this?
Right. A good teacher would show you the way, set you on the path. Yeah. I have not met Pradeep in many years. I have not practiced with him in almost 5-6 years. But he is my greatest connection. The first person I think of when I'm practicing is my teacher, is my guru. He showed me the way. He's made life beautiful and helped me see everything in life the way I'm able to see it now. You know, appreciate everything. And so a good teacher would show you the way and set you on the path. He is not going to be with you the whole time. It is up to the student how far they go, which road and which turn they choose each time. But if the teacher is not clear or sure of what they know, then the student will be misguided or get half-baked or even wrong knowledge. You know, no wonder they are still looking further when you're supposed to withdraw closer and within, right? So if you're a recent graduate, think twice before you set up shop and show off your newly acquired certificate and skills to teach. I said this earlier too. Give yourself at least 6 months to soak in and apply what you have learned in the short whirlwind programs that you do. Yeah? You might have got a good teacher, you might not have. So continue your practice. Connect with other teachers from other schools. Observe them. Learn whatever you can to further your understanding. Go to the right sources, be it online or books or personal interaction. How do you find the right sources? You know, all that is for another day. But the thing is, yes, you'll have to go to the right sources. It is most important. Way too much is out there. Way too much is out there everywhere. Think twice before signing up for the next thing. You know, these are the important things. The teacher's role in making a student living their yoga, they will set you on the path. A good teacher, if they have told the right information, there is nothing more. So there is always a difference between knowledge and information. Okay, knowledge, there is only one truth, one knowledge. Once you know that, then you will realize the futility of everything else, adding more degrees, more certificates, keeping on reading this and that, learning more, you know. It's all purposeless because all of the good sources, the right sources, take you to only one knowledge. It is only one knowledge and one truth about life. And so your yoga off the mat should take you closer to the path. And that again will be by involuting yourself, withdraw yourself closer and understanding what you are doing, how an asana is going to help you understand this better, how a pranayama practice is going to help you understand yoga better, discover you, discover the one inside deep within you. You know, what is it? So that is what you'll have to look at to be able to live yoga on the mat, off the mat, all the day, you know, all your life.
Beautifully explained, Uma. I think the confusion, at least from what little I have seen here, is people expect a certain template, right? Like do this, and this is where you will go. But what the fundamental missing piece is that they don't realize that each person will get to that same point differently. And that nothing can replace the work that the student or the seeker needs to do. You can have the best teachers, but if you are not investing in your own, you know, journey, there's no way you will get, you can buy 100 courses and you can go attend all the classes you want to. But if you are not doing the work, it's just not going to happen. And I know it sounds simple for you because of your level of understanding, but people just, they want a way to, they almost use logic to figure out yoga, right?
Exactly.
And while there is, I think it was Swami Shivananda, no, Satyananda Saraswati who said, right, it's illogical. It's, I hope I'm getting my reference right. But
okay.
This whole thing, yeah. This thing of, you know, it's yoga is not logical, it's not illogical, it's illogical. And I just feel like the fact that you have circled back to the right resources, the right teacher, and I think that is so important because here there is this concept of yoga celebrity teachers and just the more famous, and I'm doing air quotes, the more famous yoga teachers, but most of them are so heavily focused on just one tiny niche or aspect of yoga that it doesn't even qualify as a drop in the ocean of yoga.
Absolutely.
And I think I've always said, as a student, you have to be vigilant. You can't just consume anything and everything in the name of yoga, because there is just so much out there. And not everybody who teaches yoga actually teaches yoga. So
exactly.
Which is the reason why I think this whole podcast started in the first place. But coming back to living your yoga, for someone listening to this conversation, Uma, and they're keen, they want to learn how to live their yoga, where do they start? Do they just start by learning to observe themselves? Or any advice for someone who's trying to decode how to live their yoga? They've never been, again, I'm doing air quotes, taught how to do this.
Right. Living your yoga will come naturally if you've been with the right teacher. I have to come back to this, because whoever, you know, is out there now, trying to sell yoga, I will not blame them. I will only blame who's showing interest in this and buying that, whatever they're trying to sell, you know. So you will have to find the right teacher. You know, anybody can set up shop, right? But it will sell only if you buy it. Right. So you are the one who has to decide who you are going to, and you find the right teacher. Once you find the right teacher, living your yoga will come naturally. If you are struggling for what next or what you are doing, then that is because you decided on the wrong teacher or you did not spend enough time. Okay. So living your yoga will come naturally. One, if you have been with the right teacher. Two, if you have taken up this path for the right reasons, you know, fly by night, yoga teacher, certify, and then, you know, start your own business, all those thoughts, or is it a turning towards yoga for something else? Because, you know, it is, you're trying to find the purpose of life or trying to find something else, right? So if you have turned to this path and set yourself onto it, then you're on the same path as all the greatest of the greatest yogis, remember. They have just been on that path a lot longer and are perhaps a little ahead. Okay. But you have just started. But be assured, it will all come. You are on the same path as everybody else. So stop looking over your shoulder, look ahead, and keep treading slowly but surely. Allow time to be your next best teacher. That is what I would say. Allow time to be your next best teacher. Living your yoga will come naturally.
Wonderful. So, Uma, do you have any examples of, in your own life or experience of living yoga that will help us in this conversation?
I really would like to tell you a small story about this, about Tommy Dog we had with us for 15 years. You know, we brought him back to India when we moved from Charlotte. He died about 5 years ago. He was totally loved and happy. In India, there are a lot of street dogs, you know that, right? So
yes.
Mm-hmm. When I used to walk Tommy, I used to have to carry a stick to ward off the other street dogs from barking or staging a fight with Tommy. It was really stressful every time. I used to be scared of the other dogs, literally hated taking Tommy out because of the stress. It was exhausting because I had to be careful not to be bit by one of the street dogs or make sure that nobody bites Tommy and stuff like that. So when Tommy left us, we continued to walk around the neighborhood, and we, meaning me and my husband, and strangely, we started looking at the street dogs more closely. You know, only when Tommy was gone, we were able to, you know, look at the others. And without fear or aversion, we started looking at their eyes, and they all started to look exactly like Tommy.
Oh, I bet.
They would come wagging their tails, you know, sniff. And leave behind us, you know, trail us a little bit or just go after some time. Just like, you know, we saw that they have always been there, the same, you know, the dogs, the street dogs, and only the circumstances seem to have changed with time. We only need a moment to look beyond what is seen with the eyes. We see better with our eyes closed, you know, because we can hear, we can feel and sense better when your eyes are closed. Love and warmth is out there everywhere. We just have to be open to it. You know, if you have one dog, so you can get this unconditional love from him, then let him teach you that there are thousands more out there that you can love unconditionally. So it's not about just getting one dog's unconditional love. Think about how many dogs you can love unconditionally. Is that even parallel? Is that even possible? You know, I promise you, I would never have learned this if I had just gone to the pet store the next day after Tommy died and got myself another dog. You know, time and Tommy taught me this. And, you know, this is something that is very dear to me as a lesson, what I've learned. And just being quiet and observing is what, again, you know, showed me what living off the mat or living your yoga is in a small way.
Beautiful. I know it's getting late for you. I have one more question for you and then I'll slowly wind this up. But I want to tell you a quick story. You know, I studied with Bharat Shetty, right? After Pradeep and Atmayan and Thousand Yoga, I was with Bharat Shetty. And I credit myself for being a very enthusiastic, probably annoying yoga student in these trainings. I used to ask a lot of questions. And I used to I was such a nerd in the training. And I think that has helped me. But I used to always ask him all these questions. And he would tell me one thing and one thing only for the most part. And he would be like, you have to practice and you have to give it time. In his simplistic way, he would tell me, you have to practice. You have to give it time. And I used to think this man doesn't know any other answer or doesn't know the answer to my question. And hence he's giving me this answer. But over time, it was so true. I was the unripe fruit, you know, and still unripe. And over time, it slowly made sense. And that was the best answer I could have asked for. But in that moment where I was like, urgently trying to get the answer, I was like, why isn't he telling me more? He just tells me the same thing again and again. But again, that was my ignorance that came forward. So
yeah, time has given you the answer for that too, you know, so there you
yes,
go.
Yes, yes, and recognizing yourself. That ignorance. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So Uma, I know you're not on social media. Okay.
Yeah.
And if the listeners want to connect with you, is there any way they can connect with you?
Right. So, yeah, email, you know, uma@1000yoga.com. That is a sure shot way of getting in touch with me. I'm always checking the email. But I'm also working with Luvina. We talked about Luvina, you know, and on some programs coming up early next year. For the yoga community, yeah, to get deeper knowledge and understanding of yoga philosophy and more. So I'm happy and will always stay in touch with you one way or the other. So if there are questions, if anyone wants to get in touch.
I can channel them to you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Through you, yes. That will be best.
Wonderful. Uma, thank you so much. This has been truly insightful. And I hope you come back. And thank you for staying up to do this.
Thank you. Thank you. So good talking to you. Nice of you to connect back. And I certainly enjoyed this. I hope it was helpful. And yes, I'll be glad to answer any further questions at a later time.
As always, thank you for listening to the very end of this podcast. If you are a regular listener and you listen all the way to the end, thank you. It always means a lot when you do. And please remember to rate and review this podcast. And if you have any questions about things we've discussed, you can find me on Instagram @arundhatibaitmangalkar. I look forward to all the little conversations we have about the podcast and the things you share, especially those of you who screenshot it and share the best parts of the podcast episode. It really is one of the highlights of my week. Okay. Thank you. As always, I'll see you next week. Until then, enjoy your practice. Take care. Bye-bye.